I've always wanted to see Paris. Let's go to the Eiffel Tower and have a croissant with some red wine. Oh my God, it'd be so romantic.
Maybe all of the Australians go to Bali because all the German girls come to Australia.
All right, I get it. Different windows, different doors. But, you know, like, okay, this guy drinks coffee funny and everyone smokes. Cool, I've seen Europe.
AFI. Backstage stories.
Okay. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing quite good. I upgraded my home office again, got a second good working podcast microphone and a second screen so I can check the levels while Skyping with you. Even better.
Oh.
So we're only getting more and more professional. What about you? I saw you being played on the big stations now.
Man. Well, first I want to say congratulations. It's always nice to get new gear. I love that feeling. Yeah, man. I guess the label's doing stuff that I could not do alone with the last couple of records, which feels good. Yeah, actually, I wrote it down here so that we could talk about it. We're doing like tomorrow evening. So this is coming out Thursday. So this will be tomorrow's Wednesday. So maybe someone will hear it already, but they're gonna have an interview on Bayern 3, which is really cool because I've only ever been on for Bayerischer Rundfunk. I was like on Bayern 2 and Puls, which are really cool. They're a bit more indie, maybe like more like I wouldn't say Bayern 3 is a bit more like mainstream, which is cool. It's a bigger audience, and then tonight, actually, the song is going to be on the Pop Shop program on SWR 3 also.
Nice, buddy.
Which is really cool.
Super cool.
That's really nice. And there's another station in Hamburg called Tide, and we're going to do an interview next Tuesday. So maybe we're going to do that next Tuesday. I'm not sure if it comes out the same day or not, but we could put a link into the description or something about that. But yeah, man, I'm really happy with the stations the song's getting played on. It's definitely a better better radio turnout than the last record, for sure.
Yeah, it's crazy because, like you said, SWR 3 and Bayern 3 are radio stations which millions and millions of people listen to every day. So that's definitely a big step. Congratulations, mate.
That's very cool. That's very cool. Yeah, actually, I got a little bit curious and Googled the like daily listeners for Bayern 3, and it's something like 3 million a day, which is still crazy to me that there's still enough people listening to radio every day. Because you imagine I always pictured it kind of like how television still has, you know, a lot of viewers, but it like standard television viewing kind of dipped a bit once they got into, you know, paid programming and streaming, and like with music and stuff too, it's all streaming and you can kind of like, you know, pay for a small service and skip the commercials. But with a lot of people still listen to radio in their car or at the office or something. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's a super, super interesting point, because we once talked about this when I studied journalism, and it was a discussion about the future of certain media outlets, etc. And there are some experts who predict that radio will survive in the long run against TV. Because radio is something you can consume while doing anything. And there are so many people who work in offices where they can listen to music and listen to radio in cars, etc., taxi drivers, and so on and so on. You can do many things while listening to radio. You can do your laundry, you can feed your children or whatever. You can't do that while watching TV.
Do you think that's like the pure reason why radio will outlast television, just because it can be on in the background? I mean, do you think that's also the same for like podcasts? I guess so, right?
Yeah, I guess it's... So I get... So first of all, I definitely don't know what's going to happen. And I'm on my own... obviously, no expert for these kind of predictions and research. But I guess that podcasts have to take advantage of that as well, because they combine the factor that you can listen to it while doing whatever with the whole non-linear listen to what you want whenever you want factor. That's why it works so good. And I think there will always be some form of radio. Maybe I could imagine that at some point podcasts will be bigger than what we know as radio, especially in Europe. But I guess this form of medium has the potential to survive for a long, long time.
Yeah. I mean, it's always, you know, like, I remember always as a kid too, like, you always hear radio, you know, kind of in the background at the gas stations, or, you know, in someone's car at a red light, or at the restaurants or something. And it feels like something that was kind of always there, and it doesn't, it's interesting to even think about it. Like, I guess it isn't really something that's going to be pushed away so easily as television could be, with streaming taking over and being so huge now with Disney Plus and HBO Plus and or whatever it is, and Netflix, of course. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely happy about it. I'm definitely happy that radio's still around, because for music, like, getting on stations like this that still have such a big following, that's kind of like the bread and butter for a musician to get exposure, especially now that we can't even perform anywhere, you know. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but what I'm super interested in, because I only know how this works at the radio station I'm working at, which is super niche and super into this indie bubble, so I don't know how it works, how the procedure works at bigger stations. But will they, on Bayern 3, you will be there for an interview and they'll play your song. But after that, is there already a form of procedure? Okay, we're going to play your song after that in this and this rotation? Or is it just, okay, we'll play it one time after your interview, and if the people tend to like it, we might play it again in some form of rotation? Or do you know how this works?
For Bayern 3, I know that we have, I know that they will, yeah, we're going to do the interview. I'm going to do it from home, and we'll do it like an hour before they play it or so. And I guess they'll play the song with it, but I don't know. Maybe I should probably ask the label if they're going to put it into rotation or not. That would really change the game, because I know that this last interview I did, if you remember this smaller station in Freudenstadt, they put the song and the interview into rotation. They did the interview like four times last week, and they've been playing two songs of mine like every day, which is really cool. And I know it's in rotation on Puls. I think it's in rotation on Bayern 2. I know it's in rotation on, of course, our radio, M94.5. But with something as big as Bayern 3, or as big as SWR3, or it also played on FM4. So stations like this, I don't know if it's in rotation or if they just play it once or twice. But I think with FM4, I think it must be in rotation, because I only found out that it was being played because a colleague from the school was driving her kids home and heard it and then called me. So no, you know, the label didn't tell me ahead of time, like, hey, you can announce it. I just found out, you know.
But that's cool. But it's an interesting point. Maybe at some episode, we might get someone who works at the bigger radio station to tell us how these kind of procedures work there, because I'm not sure about it. I've heard about how they have these kind of deals with bigger labels, etc., and there is a special workflow and regarding the charts.
Yeah.
But with smaller artists, I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm really not sure. I don't know if there's like an agreement with the label saying, you know, can we ask for a, you know, 10 plays or something. I'm not sure how it works, but and it could also be, I mean, I know the situation at Pulse with the last record was that, you know, every couple of hours or, you know, every few hours, there's a new DJ who plays like their own selection. And that's also the same, I think, at your station for the most part. So that's also part of it. Like if you have more than one DJ that likes the track, then maybe it's going to be in their personal rotation. So at these huge stations, I really don't know. I know there's a guy, I should probably get in touch with him. There's a German guy that I made friends with pretty early on when I moved here, I think like in 2016, and he worked for Pulse at the time, and he was kind of my coordinator for, do you remember this this Pulse live session that we did with Henny and Mark when we played Woman and Parade?
Yes, sir.
He was
amazing performance, amazing video, cool set. We need to put the link in.
Oh yeah, that would be cool.
It's really nice to watch and listen to.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm pretty proud of those. I think my singing's gotten better, but I do like that performance. And Henny was amazing, and Hannes and Mark. It was a good group for that gig. And he was my, this guy, Sebastian Schaffstein. Do you know him by any chance?
Yes, obviously, because I heard of him and know what he's doing because he works in kind of the same business, obviously, at a way bigger station. And you always look for what the people there are doing. Plus, at one of your first birthday parties, I've been to in Munich. It's been in the old flat in Tegernseerstraße. I guess it's been the party where I slept in your bathtub. Another funny story we might bring up at another point. But I met him there and we had a cool conversation. But it's, I don't know, 5 years ago already, something like this.
Yeah, four or 5 years ago. Yeah. I think it was five. Yeah, it was 2000. Maybe it was the first, like my first like 3 or 4 months I was living here or something. I don't even know how I knew this. I don't remember how I met this guy, but super friendly, extremely friendly guy. And he was working for Bayerischer Rundfunk at the time. And I think now he's at Bayern 3. So now I think if he's still there, he might know how they make that work. I could even ask him what the standard procedure is for something like an indie song like this. He might have some insights I could ask about.
Cool. But those are basically all of this. Those radio stories are super cool news. I'm super happy for you because I think it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'd say with
regarding your latest music, super cool.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Yeah, I think with the song, I'm surprised that, like, you know, I'm so used to there being a pretty strong buzz on something for a month, maybe two, you know, like obsessing over the numbers and seeing how the ads go on, like, you know, on Google, or seeing, you know, what I can contribute and seeing what things come organically and stuff. And you know, then it kind of, I'm so used to it after a month or two, just kind of petering out. And then I just focus on the next thing. And this is the first release, which I have to say is definitely because of the participation with this record label. But, you know, getting like every week, there's like a new email that either says, you know, we wanted to let you know that this is going on, or hey, it's playing here, or this person wants an interview or something. Like, you know, it's not like crazy. It's not, but it's much more than the last stuff. And, I'm very thankful for that. I think it's really nice. I remember we talked about before this thing came out that I was hopeful, but also, you know, kind of hesitant to have too high of hopes for what the song might do, because I've always, you know, been in my own control and been too afraid to get my hopes too high and stuff. And I have to say that, you know, if nothing else happened after today, then I'm very thankful that we got these additional interviews and got airplay on these bigger stations, because that's just something I couldn't do alone. It just, I don't know if it was the right song at the right time, but I just, that's something that they've definitely helped out with. So I can be very thankful for that. Funny story. I just, so I have this guy, Phil, who works at this, I'm not even sure how I would describe the company that he works for. He, maybe you have a better word for it in German, but he basically works for a company that he founded that helps artists track and register all of their GEMA tracks. And he basically, like, he doesn't work as a publisher, but he basically makes sure that, you know, it's registered and accounted for and the GEMA payouts are accurate, so there's nothing missing. And that's really important. And he's super friendly, and he's becoming a good friend. And he wrote me like 3 days ago, and he said, "Hey, you know, this song on your last record, I think it was the intro, maybe just introduction with this voice of George talking. He's like, intro isn't registered with any lyrics." And I was like, "Oh, okay." I was like, "Well, maybe I put something in there wrong." I was like, "But you know, it's just an instrumental with some talking, so you know, you don't have to worry about that." And he was like, "Oh, okay. I see that stars isn't the lyrics aren't registered for stars." And I was like, "What?" And then he started listing down, and all 12 out of the 15 songs with singing, I think probably I fucked it up, but none of the text were registered at all with GEMA.
But what for anyone who's not into music business, regarding this special case, what does it mean for you if your lyrics aren't registered?
Well, probably for someone like me, it doesn't change too much, but it kind of just says, like, so for Americans, GEMA is the German version of ASCAP or BMI, which are just royalty collection agencies, the companies that see where your song is played on the radio or on Spotify or television or whatever. And they say they have like a code for that song, and they see that that code has been, you know, the number has gone from 2 to 6, and they can say, okay, that song has been played 4 times. So they track, you know, like the 0.00019% of royalty attributed to that song. And then they add it up. And then after a certain point, you get a payout. And everyone who's not, you know, fucking Billie Eilish probably knows that that payout's never really much anyway, unless you're really, really blowing up or you know how to run the system. I have a few friends who really know how to play the system, but I'm not very good at it. It doesn't really change too much. It just basically means, like, on this form where I've registered the song, the title, I've registered that, like, I wrote the song, that it's my vocals, it's my copyright, all that stuff. The ownership of the lyrics were missing for all of those songs. So, I mean, technically it's not great, because if someone were to, like, hack into my GEMA, or if someone else had access, they could claim that the texts were written by them. And if one of the songs did blow up and get successful, then, you know, they would get, like, I don't know, 25% cut or whatever it is of that aspect. And thankfully he noticed it, and now he registers everything for me now. So he put everything back in, like all the songs registered by me. And so that was, it's not that funny of a story, but I felt so dumb. Like I had just missed a huge chunk of information on like a really obvious thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally know that feeling. I guess everyone has that once in a while.
But I actually, on a bright note, I wanted to mention to listeners who definitely won't know about this, but Some friends of mine in New Orleans a couple of years ago made a feature film that they had circulated into like indie film festivals around America for the last year or so, the last festival cycle. And they won a lot of awards and they got a lot of official selections and they did really well with it. And the film starring Matt Martinez, which is the person behind the song Stars, and a few, like all the filmmakers are friends of mine. A lot of the actors are all friends of mine. I went to school with them at the University of New Orleans. Super proud of them. That in the film, they have Linda Hamilton, who plays Sarah Connor in the Terminator movies. They have, you know, featuring parts, like little parts with John Goodman, who's a New Orleans native. Harry Shearer, who many people would know as like a very important voice on The Simpsons and lots of other like Spinal Tap and stuff. He's in there. They have a guy, I hate that I forget his name, but he's a character on Mad Men. And they have the father from the film Beasts of the Southern Wild. So a lot of great actors and a great story. And that film has finally made it to where they're going to release in on streaming and limited theater release. I think I'll have to put the date in the description. Let me just write that down. Date of release. Hopefully I can find out where they can, where they're going to release it for streaming so you can download it and watch it. I just want to say congratulations to these guys because they spent, I mean, they've been working on this whole thing from beginning to end for about 4 years. They've changed the script a lot. They changed the locations a lot. They got funding from scratch. You know, they pitched and they hunted down, they held events, they fundraised, they did everything. They got like a proper indie film budget. My friend Ben Samuels, who now lives in Hamburg, who's going to be doing the next music video for me, for the next single, he's the special effects VFX, visual effects coordinator for the film. He made these beautiful backdrops and seamless special effects you won't even notice are fake. And this actually, Mo, you can see it. It's the t-shirt, Easy Does It, from the film release. So I am really proud of these guys. And I have two songs from my first record in this film. So go and see it. And it's called Easy Does It. And I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud of those guys.
I'm super curious about it because through you, I kind of knew about this project for years, like you mentioned. And you told me they were invited to those kind of festivals, etc. But I never thought, okay, at some point I can just go on Netflix or Amazon or whatever and stream it. So I'm pretty curious. Let's check that out.
Yeah.
Super nice. By the way, talking about Netflix, have you seen Space Force yet?
No, I love Steve Carell and I love Ben Schwartz and John Malkovich. But then I remember like the day it came out, I happened to be on Reddit and I saw, I think Vulture Magazine or something gave it like terrible reviews. And I thought, oh no, I don't want to see Steve Carell in something that's bad because I like him so much. So I didn't watch it. Have you seen it?
Yes. The first few episodes, and I can't exactly remember during which episode I fell asleep because it was pretty late already.
But man.
I've definitely seen the first 2.5 episodes and found it pretty entertaining and pretty funny.
Okay, so you liked it.
I like the whole idea about this kind of cool but not too obvious sitcom humor, but paired with those big effects and space stations and whatever. I think that's a pretty interesting approach to for a comedy show.
You know, I just found out something really cool about Space Force today. It's funny that you bring that up. So a friend of mine from the school said that, you know, obviously Space Force is based on President Trump's initiative to build this ridiculous thing. And what Netflix did was that when they started making the show, as you know, because it is a joke about this, and they realized that the White House basically did not patent the name Space Force. They didn't, like, you know, copyright it. So Netflix did it. They patented and saved the name. So they're legally allowed to use the name for the TV show. But Trump and them, if Space Force were to, in some way, actually, in so many words, get off the ground, they won't be able to use that name legally.
Nice move, Netflix.
This is kind of like a little FU from Netflix. Yeah.
Nice one.
That's so crazy.
No, but
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say, if you find the time, watch the first two episodes and let me know what you think. Would be interesting.
Yeah, I will. I'm probably going to check it out. I was going to say, I wrote down an interesting update on the job search that I want to tell you about, but I'm just going to go quickly, run as fast as I can and pee, and then come right back.
Perfect.
Okay, 10 seconds.
It's always super funny when Skype freezes and then gets back on running a few seconds later and speeds up everything that it has captured in between. So it's kind of bad that this is not a video podcast and you could not see the delay and the gap between Jordan saying he's running to the toilet and him in the image that I have on my computer actually standing up and leaving the room because he looked like the Roadrunner.
All right. And we're back. What we talked about last time was, you know, I don't want to say that the job that I was talking about a couple of weeks ago was like a fantasy, but I do think something like this can exist. And what I'm really trying to do right now is find something similar. And I think besides, like, what I've been doing is going on things like, of course, LinkedIn and Zing and Indeed, and I think it's Glassdoor or Green Door or something like that. All these job sites. And basically, I sent out a few, like, Initiativbewerbungen, right? And for anyone who doesn't understand that, it's just like sending resumes out without the company requesting one, like just blank, like, hey, I'm looking for a job. And there's two that I thought sounded really cool. And I really hope that one of these companies gets back to me, but I'm not sure if I'm qualified really. But what I would really like to do is actually maybe work as a music supervisor for a film or media company. Alongside, you know, perhaps working in like content creation or social media or, you know, like we talked about on the other show, working somehow with media. And long story short, a humongous company that you definitely know that has made a lot of great content is Constantin Film. And I sent an Initiativbewerbung to Constantin Film as, you know, someone, maybe I could do like an internship or something, or get into like music supervision, because I told them, you know, I love like hunting for fresh music, and I'm a musician myself, and I speak the language in terms of, you know, music itself and the music business. And I'm familiar with these programs. I'm familiar with, you know, networking and building up, you know, these kinds of lists for people. And I think I could, you know, find fresh sounds for a television show or for a movie or something. And I sent out this thing to them today. And you're going to love this. TikTok is looking for a music supervisor.
Is that the reason why there is this humongous amount of TikToks finding their way to your Instagram story? Dude, today there has been one Instagram story of yours, which has only been the end where the name of the profile pops up of a TikTok.
Really?
That's something I already wanted to ask you about.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, the thing is, when you save the videos, sometimes the clip itself is already 15 seconds, which is the length of the Instagram story. So the credit that automatically gets attached to the video was made as like a new, Instagram story. So it was like the video that he made, and then the next clip just had to be his credit, which is cool. I mean, he deserves credit. It was very funny what he posted, but my favorite ones, dude. My favorite ones are.
But has this something to do with your application?
No. I've just been finding like absolutely like hilarious TikToks and had to share them. I love the one where the guy's like, it's so, I'm butchering it to do it over a podcast, but this is so funny. This guy was like, sure, you can work out every day and you can work out every day and you can run really hard and you can get really in shape and you can try really hard and you can do as best as you can. Or have you thought about getting fat? I love that one, dude. I was like, I watched it like 20 times. I was just crying. And there's another really funny one where a guy is looking at the moon and he's like, tonight will be a perfect night for a werewolf to come out. And then he pans the camera over to a guy in a werewolf mask and the werewolf just goes, I'm gay. Jesus, dude.
That's something new for this podcast, explaining TikToks in an audio format. Crazy, man. But
talk about butchering. Like, TikTok is so visual too.
I try to picture that, and I think it could be super awesome. You being the musical supervisor for TikTok.
Man, I'm sure I'm underqualified for that. But I wrote them. I was like, guys, I'm a big fan of the app. I'm using it a lot. And, you know, they're looking for people who like...
I'm a musician.
Yeah. Like, they're looking for people who can, you know, draw together unique profiles and unique artists and, pull together music for their platform. And I think that would be something I would love to do. And I have, thank God, I have the degree that I can back up, and I have a lot of experience. I just don't have like the proper projects, I guess, to send to their website and stuff. But it was a little more of a complicated like fill out form than I would have imagined. But
okay,
hopefully they write me with something. But yeah, but I applied it like Munich? I guess since we what's up?
Would the job be in Munich?
No, I don't think they have an office here. I think it would maybe, if they have an office in Germany, it's probably in Berlin, but I think it's something I could do like from somewhere else.
Okay.
And that would be ideal if I could find a job where I don't have to, I would only have to go to their office maybe like a few times, either a month or a few times a year. That'd be great. But that would be such a dream job. But I applied at probably, I would say comfortably, probably eight companies that are looking for like eight companies that deal with like film or television or media, or they have like a brand that I thought looked good that I could feel comfortable supporting, that are looking for, you know, like, yeah, either musical supervision or content creation. Or also, if anyone listening to this, you know, has any connection to radio or film or television, like write us, because I'm really curious to see if people need things like this. Like, I would love to be a musical supervisor. Like, whenever, you know, there's a great show on Netflix. Oh my God, it's British. I think it's Oh yeah, End of the Fucking World. Have you seen that before?
Only one episode or so. I haven't sticked it.
It's really cool. I didn't finish the second season, but the first season has a really great like plot line all the way through. And it has an amazing soundtrack. It's really like perfect for it. And, you know, films like, you know, what Wes Anderson puts together and stuff, like these shows and movies that are built off of what the music tells you is something I would love to put together for projects like that. And that would be really cool. So I applied at these and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but that's a beginning, and those are all pretty interesting sounding jobs, obviously.
Yeah, dude, I hope it works out. I'm not totally desperate yet, but I'm of course like really on the hunt because I've only got one more month at this school. But I even called this GEMA guy Phil and was like, "Hey man, you know lots of musicians and you know lots of businesses going on." He actually told me something interesting. He couldn't really help me too much, but he did inform me of something I didn't know. He said that there are not so many sync agencies in Germany. So these, for people who don't know, sync agencies are those companies that look for music to put into television and film. And like, for example, there's this Swedish television show. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing this right, but I think it's called like Eskamig. I think it's like Love You or Love Me or something with love. And they, like the sync agency attached to that network, wrote me about getting a song into that show. So that happened earlier this year too, that a song of mine was synced into, you know, licensed into that. Same with this movie, Easy Does It. It's like we deal with these sync agencies. He's saying there's not so many in Germany. There's one called White Horse Music. I never heard of that before. But that might be an option that I could try and work out, because apparently Phil and I have a mutual friend who has a friend who works at that agency. So perhaps I could even try and get into one of these fresh sync agencies in Germany and try and find music for TV. I think that would also be really fun.
Yeah, it sounds like kind of the same job, just you're not selecting music for TikTok, but for actual TV program.
Yeah, exactly. And either one would be really cool. Either one, as long as I can be a part of like creating some cool content somehow. But yeah, man, if you could travel anywhere tomorrow, I think what would be the first place you'd want to go to?
I guess, let me look. I got a huge world map right in front of me, and I guess I would say South Africa.
Okay. Like Johannesburg or another place?
Maybe just, I don't know how long my journey could be, but taking whatever I can get.
Let's say you could go a month.
Then
anywhere.
Then anything I could get, like obviously the coast, Port Elizabeth, Cape Town, and then maybe a short trip to Namibia. So basically, I've never been to Africa and I want to explore Africa. I also guess South Africa is the most basic answer for that, and the most basic Africa trip as a white European you could think of. But I guess it could be a good start to a journey. And I've never been so far in the Southern Hemisphere. That's one thing I'm super curious about.
Man, I would say if you're going to go to Africa, yes, go to South Africa. I've never been there. I'm sure it's really cool, but I really have to recommend the Far East, man. Like Tanzania was the coolest place I've ever been to. It was so...
You've been to Tanzania?
Tanzania and Zanzibar.
Oh, okay.
Yes, man. We went in 2018. It was like the honeymoon. And man, it was the greatest trip I've ever taken in my life. I would really, really recommend, I would really, really recommend that. We did like, I think it was like a week and a half in Tanzania. There was like a safari. It was their winter time there. We went in July, and we were the only ones on this huge plot, like right on the beach of the Indian Ocean. So you would, you know, you'd stand on the beach and look all the way left and all the way right, and there was nobody, nobody. And it was unbelievable, man. There was like, you know, we saw like a herd of tall black African elephants, and we saw like really exotic birds and giraffes, and it was a really, really, really cool time. And then we went to Zanzibar and went to Stone Town and saw these crazy food markets and swam in the ocean. And yeah, man, I would really recommend the East as well, but I would check out the South. I keep trying to convince Ify of where we should try and go next. And I think she's really feeling someplace like Iceland, which I've never really thought about before.
That's something I would also think about, but I've been to Scandinavia, to Norway, the very north of it, so beyond the what do you call it? Polar Circle, I guess, basically.
Where did you go? You went all the way like to the, where? How north did you go?
The very north of Norway, beyond the Arctic Circle.
Oh wow! Okay.
So it doesn't really. It was in summer, and so it doesn't really get dark at any point of day or night. But Iceland is I guess also special. But Iceland is also, I don't know. I feel like there's a new hype of Europeans going to Iceland within the last 10 years. And I want to go to a place, and so maybe South Africa is not the best guess, because I want to go to a place where I can, for the first time in my life, be the only German tourist being around. Because that's something that fucks me up every time. No matter where I go, there are always German tourists.
Yeah, I mean, dude, the first place you chose was South Africa. I'm sure that's swarmed with German tourists.
Yeah, so
and you know what I mean.
In terms of that, it was pretty dumb to call it.
No. It's probably still. I mean, I'm sure it's an amazing place to see. But I was just thinking, like, you're saying Iceland is kind of trendy for Europeans to go to. Do you think is Iceland the new Australia? Because I feel that every time German person between 19 and 24 decides to go, like, take a year off of their life, they're always like, and then I went to Sydney and I stayed there and I played guitar on the streets and I was busking and I made my own shoes out of hemp. And then I got a dreadlock and I met this guy named, Toby, and we went surfing together. And it's just so fucking predictable.
Yeah. It's either Australia, New Zealand, or something like Thailand, Vietnam, Bali.
Ooh, Bali, so yes.
Indonesia or Vietnam or something.
Oh. Dude,
I think I would be interested in going to Bali because of this clash I've heard about, because Australians told me that Bali is kind of the island Mallorca is for Germans. So they go there for their all-inclusive party holidays, get completely shit-faced every day, behave like shit. And on the other hand, you have all those European girls just finished their A-levels, etc., who want to find themselves or whatever. And those kind of hippie vibes. And I guess it could be interesting to see this clash.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to see that. I think
maybe all of the Australians go to Bali because all the German girls come to Australia.
Dude, that's...
Or it's not just girls, obviously.
Yeah. I always kind of feel bad for like when these young German girls go to Australia, and like if they have boyfriends back home, what nightmares must be running through these boyfriends' heads? Because if you ever look at the Instagram photos of these girls who go to Australia for a summer or whatever, then they always meet these fucking super fit guys who are, they're all, you know, 6'2". They all have like curly blonde hair down to their shoulders. They all have like super six packs with the little V's and like, you know, as Joe Rogan would say, like the dick root, you know, like the shorts are so low. You see the dick root and they're all like crazy tan and they're surfers and they're all relaxed. And I feel like if I was a German guy and my girlfriend wanted to go to Australia for a month, I'd be like, okay, look, either you have to wait until I can afford to go with you, or we're just going to go ahead and have to split this up because I don't trust you. Or like, I don't trust the temptation, you know what I mean?
But one thing, what is the American equal to, or let's say the New Orleans equal to the German girls going to Australia?
Man, probably probably for all of the states, the standard like go-to place, if you're not from there, to travel to. So it's probably Miami, to be honest with you. It's probably spring break time for all the college people and like the seniors in high school and stuff. Everyone goes to Florida. Everyone goes to Florida. And because it's mostly beach and it's mostly alcohol and it's mostly...
And mostly crocodiles.
Yeah, it's like crocodiles and like date rape drugs. That's mostly what the sand of Florida is made of. Crocodile teeth and date rape powder. And I think it's okay, Florida's way too easy to make fun of. It's like everyone knows Florida's trashy, but I would say like if people don't go to... probably most traveled is like, okay, people, everyone wants to go see New York. Everyone wants to go to LA. They want to go to Miami or someplace in Florida and get hammered, like Pensacola or something, and like pass out. And then traveling internationally, which is a significantly smaller amount because so many Americans don't travel, but when they do, probably they go to Cancun. Or to somewhere in Mexico, probably. Or I'm trying to think. Usually, I'm trying to think of someplace that's not so exotic that they think is really exotic. Honestly, probably it's just a basic Euro trip. Like that's such a classic thing. They're like, oh, let's go see, you know, they want to go to, you know, Italy and Spain and France. Okay, oh, France. That's it. It's Paris. every basic American, when they think about traveling internationally, they all say the same thing. It's like either they're going to go to New York, or if they're going to travel out of the country, then they go like, oh, but I've always wanted to go to Paris. I have always wanted to see Paris. Let's go to the Eiffel Tower and have a croissant with some red wine. Oh my God, it'd be so romantic.
This was the most American impersonation ever. Nobody drinks red wine
oh my God. Croissants. Oh my God. Oh my God. Jonathan, let's go to Paris. Come on. Let's go and see the Eiffel Tower. Do you think there's really mimes there?
Basically, for those who do not know, that's Jordan's story, how he ended up in Europe. Just a little accident. on his basic bitch Euro trip. 5 years later, we'll be sitting here.
You know what's funny is in 2013, I did that bitch ass Euro trip and I never did it again. That was a good trip though. I mean, I get the appeal. You know, if you do it all in a month, you see the whole thing, you're like, yeah, all right, I get it. Different windows, different doors, but you know, like, you know, like, okay, this guy drinks coffee funny and everyone smokes. Cool. I've seen Europe, you know? Oh man, we talked about it before, but I am sometimes surprised that Europe doesn't have a higher like alcoholism level than Americans, because I feel like everybody in Europe, I always see them with like their, you know, beer and wine and schnapps and stuff, but I guess they're just classier with it. They just know when to say no, that's been enough.
I think that's also bullshit from a European's point of view.
Probably. Man, I imagine like the number of alcoholics, secret alcoholics in Europe is probably the same as like actual, you know, COVID-19 numbers that China isn't releasing. It's kind of like, no, we're doing fine. Everything's great. Yeah. America's the only bad one. Yeah. Don't worry about us. We disinfected the streets and we wiped down the cars and we told everyone to stay inside. We're A-okay. And then you really go there and they're like, everyone stay inside. It's code red.
Yeah, but that's basically a thing I guess Europeans or especially Germans tend to do. To always look at other places, like, okay, basically you're having issues like alcoholism or whatever you have anywhere around the world in 21st century. But people tend to like not realize how big the problem actually is in Europe, but always look at the States and, the unemployment rate is humongous. They don't have insurances and whatever, or no one can afford them. And Europe is sacred land, kind of that storytelling. And I'm often disturbed by that.
Yeah, I mean that. Well, right now it's easier than ever to just point fingers at America, and rightfully so. I mean, it's just falling apart at the seams in every single way. But in general, like even like 8 or 9 years ago, you know, like primetime Obama era America, which was like looking really good in general, at least on paper, or on the media or stuff, then, you know, that's probably a time where, you know, not so many fingers should have been pointed for dumb things like that, but it's always easy. Americans are loud and they're drunks and they're kind of rude about other cultures. I mean, I was also way more ignorant about like respecting differences with, I wasn't racist, but I was definitely more ignorant about respecting differences in cultures and stuff. And like, you know, living, basing all of my information about other places on stereotypes that I've gotten from, you know, movies or whatever, and thought America was kind of like home base for the world, you know, and it's so dumb. It's so dumb. But again, I mean, who is really any country to point fingers? I think the only country that could probably really point fingers and make fun, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, maybe Iceland. It's, I mean, Iceland. But they fuck each other. They have to have there's a website to make sure you don't fuck a cousin in Iceland. Did you know that? That's true.
No.
Dude,
but I could imagine
that's 100% true. You know, I worked for Stephanie at Café Blas. She's Icelandic and she's here in Munich. And I asked her about this thing once because I heard it. There's like a government mandated website that's constantly updated. And it's so that you can check that the guy you're dating or the girl you're dating is not related to you, because the population was so inbred and and it's so small, the amount of people. That's absolutely nuts to me that you could accidentally have sex with like a third cousin.
Yeah, that's super weird. But I want to say one thing about this ignorance and finger pointing at other countries, because I think Europe has a culture for that because of its history. And they tend to say like, yeah, we've been through that and that we're highly educated on these topics. And what we have worked on our Nazi history in Germany. Now there's this racism case in the US. Oh no, what's happening there? And but now there's a moment where many people realize you don't have to look to the US. We have the same fucking problem here.
Right. Right. Yeah.
It
sure.
Just was easier to make this an American problem.
Right.
But basically, we have systematic racism to this day in Europe, in basically every European country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's, I mean, it's hard to say if it's, no, I would say it's obviously worse in America. I mean, there's much more like violence and murder related to this. And it's, you know, but it's hard to say. I mean, like, I don't know the information about Europe's systemic racism as much as I understand America's systemic racism, especially now, what all is like, what you're learning all the time now about stuff that you didn't think about before. But, you know, when I think about how, in terms of bad, it's like, yes, of course there's the prison system is targeted towards African Americans because of racism, and there's more, and, you know, like we talked about that in the last episode a lot, and there, you know, the death rate from, you know, cops to African Americans, like one in every 1,000 American born black men is going to die at the hands of a cop. And you know, like the welfare system and the education system and the housing system, it's all targeted and all meant to keep this race of people as low and as quiet and as poor as possible, at all costs. And that's something that I see in America a lot. And I know that racism exists in Europe, and of course it does. And it's against, you know, the refugees who were just, you know, so many of them were led into Germany in the last 3 or 4 years. And it's against, well, I mean, you as a German can probably dive into that easier than I can. I mean, where do you see it as a German?
There's one fundamental point I also have never thought about, but have listened to or have read, because there is a Afro-German, I don't know if you could say Afro-German. Her dad is an Afro-American from Philadelphia. Her mom is, no, the other way around. Her mom is from Philadelphia. Her dad is from Cologne, and she's a black journalist and author in Germany, and has written an amazing book, which its title is Was weiße Menschen nicht über Rassismus hören wollen, aber wissen sollten, which translates to What White People Don't Want to Hear But Should Know About Racism. And she always somehow compared the situations in the USA versus in Europe. And she says one thing, I'm not quite sure if it's something she said within the book or has told on a podcast. I'm not 100% sure, but the point is that in the States, you have the racist problems you just mentioned, but there's still, black people are still part of the society. They're treated in a fucked up way in so many situations, and there is a systemic problem, but they're still part of the society because of the whole history of slavery there, etc. And in Europe, you often have a more xenophobic racism in terms of coming to a village on the German countryside, and some of the people living there might have never seen a black person before in their life, but also have built up in their heads a kind of racist thinking.
Right, right. Yeah, I can imagine the racism in Europe being far more against, like, maybe even just, like, the Muslim religion in general, because they don't understand, like, seeing a hijab or seeing, you know, the distance between the, you know, traditional men and women as they walk or something, or, like, you know, that's muddy water, honestly, because it's hard to say if people are, in every circumstance, just against something that they don't think is right, or if they're confused because they don't understand it and they're older and they choose to ignore the changes. And yeah, it's really hard to say. I mean,
I guess the point I wanted to make, the difference I see through what I have heard and read, etc., is that in the US you have more of an open clash between by POC and a white society that has been unfair to them for hundreds of years.
Right.
But all of those events happening within one country. And in Europe, it's more subtle, because
that's it.
Europeans didn't treat people like shit in their homes. They went over to Africa and treated people like shit there.
Right. Yeah.
And now, and you still have this clash, but it seems so far away, and people think, okay, especially in Germany, We have been through the post-Nazi times, and there has been this kind of society rebuild, etc., etc. And that's a point where we can't really be racists because we've been through that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Germany has to be very, yeah.
They think, okay, we've been through that, now it's enough.
Right, right. I mean, Germany, of all places, needs to be like leading the forefront on the idea of anti-racism. They need to be like the people at the front of the line showing how a country can come back from tragedy and come back from, you know, ignorance and hate, and they can, you know, become such an open border, an understanding, progressive country. And it's done wonders. It's done amazing things in the last, 60, 70 years. But there's always room for more growth. And I think especially in a time like this where the world seems to be at the boiling point, it's maybe time for a country like that to say something and to represent something good amongst all of the people the best way that it can. And unfortunately, I know that we're diving into like a super interesting topic right now, but unfortunately now I'm really running a little bit late and now I have to stop. I love this. Maybe let's make a note to try and come back to this, next week, because I feel like we always dive into this really interesting stuff right at the end, and our schedules have been so tight, especially me the last 2 weeks. So I hate that I have to cut it off again, but,
I would suggest that we get back into this topic, but search for someone who can say more about this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Someone who can teach us and like inform people, and not just give, because mine is just opinions. I'm not educated enough to really be able to help people learn. Okay, so Mo, thank you so much for your time. I love you, buddy. You're the man. And yes, if you enjoyed today's episode, please go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this show, and please give us a good rate or review or a comment or share us around, or even just tell a friend, because word of mouth really still helps these shows a lot more than you think. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week, guys.
Bye-bye.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.